The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Good evening. A state's relation to books tells you about a state. The state of this country is such that from July 2021 to June 2022, PEN America's Index of School Book Bans lists 2,532 instances of individual books being banned, affecting 1,648 unique book titles by 1,261 different authors, 290 illustrators, and 18 translators. The state of Russia, let's just say that you've come to the right place tonight. Vladimir Sorokin's politically urgent work is a fantastic, phantasmagorical indictment of what our Philadelphia novelist Ken Kalfas, who, by the way, also lived in Russia for a few years, has called a disorder peculiar to the country. Sorokin's work was banned in the Soviet Union but became a major presence in the Moscow underground of the 1980s and is immensely popular among Russian-speaking readers today. His second novel, The Queue, available in translation from New York Review Books, was his first published novel, published by an emigre press in France in 1985. His novel, There Four Hearts, available in translation from Uncle Bobby's books up front, was shortlisted for the Russian Booker Prize in 1992. His novel, Blue Lard, published in 1999, which features a graphic sex scene between the clones of Stalin and Khrushchev, drew a criminal investigation over pornography charges. 2 years later, in 2001, Sorokin received the Andrei Bely Award for Outstanding Contributions to Russian Literature. In 2016, pro-Kremlin activists accused him of extremism and going against Russian Orthodox values for his 2000 short story, Nastya. He told the New York Times in an interview this year, "A Russian writer has two options. Either you're afraid or you write. I write." Sorokin, who was born in 1955 in a small town outside of Moscow, is the author of 15 novels, 6 film scripts, 12 plays, an opera libretto, and many short stories, one of which, Horse Soup, won the O. Henry Award this year and is forthcoming in English as part of a collection titled Red Pyramid, also from New York Review Books. His work has been translated into more than 30 languages. He used to split his time between the Moscow suburb of Vnukovo and Berlin, but found himself in exile after Putin's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February of this year. In March, Sorokin was among the signatories of an appeal by eminent writers to all Russian speakers to spread the truth about the war in Ukraine inside Russia. Sorokin tonight is joined by Mark Krotov, publisher and co-editor of the literary magazine N+1, and by Sorokin's wonderful translator, Max Lawton, a novelist and musician who lives in New York. Lawton is the recipient of the 2022 O. Henry Award for translation of Sorokin's Horse Soup. He first encountered Russian literature as physical objects. Please join me in thanking the Philadelphia Free Library for giving us an opportunity to welcome tonight Vladimir Sorokin, Mark Krotov, and Max Lawton.
Thank you so much for coming. This is a real thrill for me to be here, with Vladimir and with his translator Max Lawton. On one hand, I sort of have so much to say about Vladimir's work. Selfishly, I just want to sort of speak in superlatives, but I'll try to let my interlocutors do most of the talking. Gosh, where to begin? I think, you know, the first thing to note is that you have two really brilliant books by Vladimir that are available outside that he'll sign after the event that, you know, represent sort of a number of extremes and curiosities and obsessions in his work, but part of what makes this such a compelling writer and part of why I'm so happy that we get to reintroduce Vladimir's work to the U.S. is that there's sort of no limits to his range, his curiosities, and particularly his experiments in form. And I want to kind of get at all of those this evening, or as many as we can, and also, of course, to talk to Max about the work of translation, because, you know, for a long time, many of Vladimir's works were considered untranslatable. This was the standard story. You would hear this all over the place. And then Max simply went and translated them. So, a real lesson in platitudes, I think. But I'd love to, as someone who's had the great privilege of editing some of these translations and of working with Vladimir for a long time, I'd love to sort of convey a little bit of how the sausage is made, if at all possible. And that's actually probably like a polite image to use, given some of the extremes in Sorokin's literature. But I'd like to start at the beginning, just to give a sense of your own, you know, of your career and of the works that sort of slowly came to emerge, and especially of their context. You began writing in the late 1970s and early 1980s, and in the Soviet Union. And I was hoping that you could kind of give a sense of what that moment was like culturally, but particularly for you. How did you acquire the sort of the freedom, the internal freedom to write the way you did, and in that early period? And what were the kinds of things you were interested in exploring in your work at that time?
Okay. Good evening. Thank you for coming in those rainy and stormy day, and you are here, and we are here, and literature is alive. And I am happy. Thank you. I will answer in Russian. It's an ontological question. Как все начиналось и почему это все, собственно, и как? Ну, это литература вообще, ну, это как потеря невинности, собственно. Кто-то из писателей сказал, что творчество — это вообще как выстрел в упор.
He said that how this all began and why it all began is very difficult to say. Someone once said that literature is just a shot taken sort of in the dark at random.
Ну, как...
That art, creativity is not literature. Okay.
Я помню, Бродский сказал как-то, что его стихи, ну, это попытка борьбы с культурным удушьем, да? Ну, мне это близко очень. Я родился и вырос в тоталитарном государстве, вот, где, в общем, по-настоящему культурного воздуха было очень мало, собственно. И вот я рано попал в московский андеграунд. Собственно, это и был такой, ну вот, пузырь культурного воздуха, кислорода.
Mm-hmm. So Brodsky once said that literature is a war with cultural suffocation. And I grew up in the Soviet Union, where real literary air was incredibly rare. But I did come up in the Moscow Underground, which was sort of a form of creative oxygen for me.
I think in, you know, a number of sort of writers, different writers respond to that strangulation in different ways. Some of them seek to write completely against it and to create work that's as far removed from it as possible. But you, I think, did something more fascinating and more seductive. You tried to, in some cases, perfectly capture and mimic the language of your strangler, and at great length, you know, and then you proceeded to sort of slowly, in the course of a story or a novel, rip your, you know, strangler's hands off and show everybody all the blood that was coming out. And I'm interested in that quality of mimicry and pastiche. Mm-hmm. How did that start?
Okay. Ну, я повторюсь, что я попал 20-летним в круг московского андеграунда, где уже, ну, в основном это были художники, собственно, и они занимались соцартом.
So I'll repeat that when I was 20 years old, I found myself in the Moscow underground, which was principally made up of artists. They engaged in what was called соцарт.
Но это разновидность советского поп-арта, да? Ну, они работали с советским официальным стилем визуальной пропаганды.
So this is really just a species of Soviet pop art. They were working with the cliches of Soviet official visual art.
И, собственно, их опыт помог мне увидеть советскую литературу, ну, вот этот стиль социалистического реализма как вещь, да, вот, ну, как объект, с которым можно работать. И я начал, в общем, заниматься соцартом в литературе. Это были первые шаги.
So this experience helped me to also see Soviet literature as a sort of thing that could be manipulated and parodied in the same way. So I began to do such arts in the context of literature.
Мимикрия. Если ты видишь это как вещь, то ты должен владеть этой вещью, как бы, да?
If you see this as a thing, then you need to control or take possession of this thing.
Ну, это как Энди Уорхол, да? Он умел рисовать рекламу Супа Кэмпбелл, да? Профессионально, собственно.
So it's like Andy Warhol, who really did know professionally, had the professional ability to draw these ads, to draw this Campbell's soup can.
Или Рой Лихтенштейн, да, он умел рисовать комиксы американские.
Or Рой Лихтенштейн, who really didn't know how to draw these American comics.
И я, собственно, должен был почувствовать всю прелесть стиля соцреализма, собственно. И я это почувствовал.
And I really had to feel the whole of Soviet literature's charm or enchantment, and I did really feel it.
Потому что иначе бы это не получилось. Это, ну, это была бы чистая сатира.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have... Nothing would have turned out. I wouldn't have been able to do it. It would have just been satire.
Я не хотел сатиры. Я хотел сделать что-то необычное.
I didn't want to create satire, I want to do something out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I like that you narrate that as if it's so self-evident, as if anyone could have done that. Though, of course, the whole point is that only you really did that in literature, and that's that feels very unique to me. You know, I think that part of the story of the transition from, you know, from the Soviet period to the post-Soviet period is a transition from kind of one or a very narrowly acceptable set of official voices and languages to a kind of endless profusion of them in the 1990s and a sort of sense that anything goes. You know, for the first time you have the language of, you know, of commercialism, of advertising, of all kinds of vulgarity that were never made public before, and all kinds of sort of registers and extremes that were previously forbidden or suppressed. By that point, you were already a working novelist for a decade. How did it feel like to adjust your own writing and your own approach to that sudden profusion?
Okay. Ну, после периода соцарта, ну, он длился у меня где-то около пяти лет, собственно.
After this period of соцарт, which lasted for about 5 years for me?
Я, собственно, занялся классической русской литературой, собственно, и ее тоже можно было разглядеть как вещь, да?
I began to deal with classical Russian literature, which was also possible to conceive of as a thing or an object.
Потому что соцреализм во многом опирался на опыт классической русской литературы конца XIX века с ее вот описательной мощью и дидактизмом.
Because socialist realism really did, or Soviet literature really did rely in many respects on Russian literature, classical Russian literature of the end of the 20th century with its descriptive power and deductivism.
Вот, собственно, этот же метод, ну, я повторял и с другими типами литературы, но не только великой русской литературы. Я написал роман «30-я любовь Марины», который начинался как эротический роман, вот, а закончился как советский производственный роман.
So I have actually used this method with many types of literature and not just great classical Russian literature. For example, my novel Marina begins as a sort of erotic novel, and at the end it becomes a typical Soviet production novel.
Вот. Ну а в 90-е годы, о которых вы говорили, собственно, они добавили еще материала. И появились новые литературные практики.
But they did add new materials and so sort of new literary practices appeared.
Да. Но это и это продолжается до сих пор.
And that process that began in the 90s is still continuing today.
Again, yeah, you make it sound so easy, but it's true. And you know, I think part of the, you know, for those who haven't yet had the pleasure of reading this work, in a lot of these books, it sort of feels as if a kind of formal problem or puzzle is being solved across the entire length of the book. But I mean, to my mind, it never feels like a puzzle. It just feels like literary pleasure, basically. But it's, you know, as I think it's clear, it's very unusual for, you know, for a writer to describe their work in this kind of interrogative fashion and very impressive and exciting. I wanted to ask you about, you know, there's a lot of extremes in your books, you know, of violence and sex and so on, and you've been controversial because of it and have gotten in trouble for it. I think it's a great thing. But I'm curious if you can sort of explain or narrate your interest in extremes as a writer.
Okay. Ну, собственно, Есть разные литературы, да, как бы.
There are different types of literature.
Есть комфортная литература, как мягкое кресло.
There's comfortable literature, like a soft armchair.
А есть литература, как душ Шарко, да?
There's literature like a...
Душ Шарко — это очень тонкие струи воды.
There's a shower with like very, very thin and penetrating streams of water.
Да.
Some literature is like that.
Вот, собственно, ну, я хочу, чтобы...
Oh, contrast.
Литература, ну, не давала спать, что ли, чтобы она будила и ставила большие метафизические вопросы.
So I don't want literature that makes you fall asleep. I want it to arouse you, to wake you up, and to ask big metaphysical questions.
Когда меня спрашивают, почему так много насилия у вас?
When people ask why there's so much violence in your work.
Ну, я вырос в обществе, где все было им пропитано.
I grew up in a society.
Воздух был пропитан насилием. И это было не только насилие государства.
I grew up in a society, when people ask me why there's so much violence in my work, I say that I grew up in a society that was marinated in it. The very air was violence, but it wasn't just state violence.
Потому что, собственно, ну, вы знаете, что советская система — это 70 лет насилия, да? И, ну... В сталинские годы это было, ну, это был массовый террор, вот, и идеологическое насилие, и собственно, желание этой, ну, системы уничтожить человека как свободного феномена, собственно.
You know that the Soviet Union was just 70 years of violence, right? The Stalin years were, of course, a form of mass terror that were ideological as well. But the Soviet system represented a desire to destroy the individual and the human as a phenomenon.
Ну, это, ну, это был удар, конечно, очень мощный по религиозному сознанию и традиции.
It was, of course, a very powerful blow delivered to religious consciousness and tradition.
Естественно, в людях это вызывало, ну, иногда непонятную агрессию, собственно. Она случалась и просто как вспышки в жизни, в быту и так далее.
So it inculcated this incomprehensible violence in people that sometimes would just appear as sort of sparks.
Вот, собственно, ну, это большая тема вообще.
It's
об
big...
этом можно долго говорить. Но у меня есть, не только насилие, на самом деле.
It's a big question, of course. We could talk about it for a long time, but there's not just violence in my books.
Есть и любовь, безусловно.
There's also love, of course.
Yes, and a lot of and a lot of pleasure of all kinds. And again, I've used that word already, but particularly for the reader, I think I really can't overstate how wonderful it is to see all this playfulness and experimentation on the page. And I think, you know, one thing that I was curious about, especially in light of Telluria, which has just come out, is, you know, part of what happens in your work is that the experiments in voice start to multiply within the span of a single book. So in Telluria, there are 50, right, 50 different voices and registers, and which a huge challenge for the translator as well, and a huge accomplishment. And I wonder, gosh, I don't even know. It's so amazing. But how do you set out to do something like that? What makes you excited to try that?
Ну, это некий такой новый был опыт. Я раньше, собственно, писал разными стилями. Вот. А здесь же, в этой книге, была такая задача, ну, описать наш мир, ну, как бы наш мир или мир недалекого будущего не человеческим взглядом, а как бы многими глазами, как бы, да? И вот 50 этих глав — это разные взгляды на наш мир, все написаны разными стилями. Но там есть одна идея, собственно, это вот этот новый наркотик теллур, который дает как бы людям возможность получать что они хотят.
So writing this book was really a new kind of experience. Of course, I had written in different styles before, but in this task, the describe was to describe our world as it were, our world or perhaps the world of the near future, not with a human gaze, but with many eyes. And so that's why we have these 50 chapters with 50 different styles. It's different eyes onto our world. There is a through line, however, of course, it isn't all difference. There's the new narcotic tellurium that gives people the ability to have what they want.
Да, и я бы добавил еще, что на вопрос, зачем это, да, what for, как бы, да, я бы так ответил, что наш мир невозможно уже описать при помощи линейной прозы. Он слишком сложен, чтобы его описывать, как в 20 веке даже. Я не говорю о 19 веке. Нужны новые формы его описания.
I would also add that to the question of what's the purpose of all this, that our world is impossible to describe with linear prose. It's too complicated to describe as it was in the 20th century, and that's not even to talk about the 19th century. We need new forms of its description.
Ну, это попытка найти такую форму.
This is an attempt, Telluria, assumedly, is an attempt to find this form.
Are there writers, either from the 21st century, who you admire, who are also interested in this sort of multiplicity of voices as a way to capture chaos and formlessness, or are there older writers that you admire for sort of trying to do the same thing for eras in the past?
Ну, собственно, я учился у них, да.
I studied with them or learned from them.
У наших бородатых классиков.
From our big bearded classics.
Вот. И продолжаю учиться, собственно, и использование стилей разных писателей и даже несуществующих русских писателей 19 века, да? Ну, это очень приятная задача.
So, continuing to study with them and learn from them and to imitate them, which even includes non-existent Russian writers of the 19th century, is a very pleasant experience.
Я помню, что, ну, когда я стал печататься на родине, но это начало 90-х только было, разные критики писали, что, ну, Сорокин — это не настоящий писатель, у него нет собственного стиля, как бы, да?
So, when I started to be... When I was published in The Motherland, which this only happened at the end of the 90s, a lot of critics actually wrote in journals that, well, here's a real writer. He doesn't have his own style.
Я говорил, это и есть мой стиль.
And I said, that is my style.
Использовать другие стили.
To use other styles.
We'll turn to questions from the audience in a few minutes, but before we do that, I did want to, you know, we're very lucky to have the translator of these novels here with us. Translators never get enough respect. Hopefully this event is a corrective. But Max, you know, obviously you and I have worked together, but I'm curious, especially with a book like Telluria, which demanded, in a sense, it demanded 50 times the normal amount of effort of a translator. How did you go about this wild task? And I guess also, I'm interested in the process, but also in what kind of back and forth you had with Vladimir over the course of your work.
Well, thank you for the kind words. It was just, Telluria was actually a lot of fun because I think Telluria is just a very free book. Sorokin and Vladimir has a lot of books that are not as free, books that deal with the Soviet past and that sort of cultural suffocation or strangulation he spoke about earlier that Brodsky was interested in fighting. I think you see Telluria is a victory over that strangulation. And one might also say that it was a victory over the strangulation of the translator because I had almost total freedom. I did not have or do not have that kind of freedom when dealing with Sorokin's books that deal with the Soviet past. So that can be a lot harder. For example, his book Norma or The Norm is quite difficult to translate because we don't have an equivalent language for Soviet totalitarianism or the second half of Blue Lard, those incessant sort of Soviet-style declarative statements, unfunny jokes, stupid puns that you don't want to hear. It's hard to think of a way to make that sound like anything other than terrible and overripe prose in English. But of course, it's a specific historical phenomenon. It's a phenomenon that's being used as an object and parodied. So I guess with Telluria, it was a very fun and free process. And we didn't, I think Vladimir would just tell me if he thought something worked and tell me if he thought I could do something better. If he picked out any mistakes, he'd tell me. But it was very, Telluria was the most free of them all, which maybe is a problem. But I think there was a degree of freedom because it's a fantasy world. It's an alternate view onto our world. So it's not, the norm's much harder. You'll see when you read it, there's a section of poems that, 12 poems, one for each of the seasons, plus an extra. There's a 13th, right? No, anyways. I think there's a 13th. Yeah. And these poems are parodies of official Soviet poetic forms, and to translate poems sucks. It's not, I hate it. But then beyond that, it's also Soviet poems, and beyond that, it's also specific genres of Soviet poems, and beyond that, there are also these little distortions, so you have to know the ways it deviates. So that was very different from Telluria.
It's very difficult to translate. It's
yeah, that
it's
part,
a hard work.
That part hurt. But no, Telluria was fun and easy, and I think the war against strangulation had been won.
Great. I have a lot more questions, but I think we should turn it over to the audience. Yes.
Hello. Ну, прежде всего, большое спасибо. I want to ask a question. I read your book «День опричника», and I remember me reading to this book, and I thought it's like it's totally fictional because you describe future Russia with like monarchy restored. But do you think now, like consider what's going on in Russia now, it's prophecy? What do you think?
Ну, это мне говорили еще, ну, лет 5 назад, как бы, да. Действительно, эта книга, я написал ее 10 лет назад, собственно, нет, 15, I'm sorry.
Вот. I wrote this book 15 years ago, and they said to me even 5 or 10 years ago.
И когда я написал ее, ну, критика была такая, ну, как бы, в основном негативная, что это как бы, ну, болезненные фантазии Сорокина такие вот.
When I wrote it, it was essentially the criticism to do with it was negative, saying, what is this sort of sick fantasy?
Да. Но шли годы, путинское государство все больше погружалось в прошлое, и с каждым годом, в общем, критика все более позитивно относилась к этой книге. Вот. А потом уже стали говорить, ну, это как у Сорокина в «Дни опричника».
So, but years passed, and Putin's regime became more and more immersed in the past. So with each passing year, the criticism or the reception became more positive until it got to the point that people would simply say, whoa, this is exactly like Sorokin wrote about it in «Day of the Oprichnik».
Ну, по поводу того, что это как бы предсказание, ну, там, или пророчество, я скажу, что в литературе осознанные пророчества недействительные. Это все интуитивно.
So, but about the notion that it was a form of prophecy or a foretelling of what was to come, literature cannot be sort of an intentional act of prophecy. It's all just sort of intuitive. It just happens.
Как литератор, я доволен, конечно, что вот, ну, как бы жизнь повторила мою книгу, но как гражданин я очень разочарован.
As a writer, I'm of course content that reality has repeated the shape of my book, but as a citizen, I'm very unhappy that it's turned out this way.
Very disappointed.
Very disappointed.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the risk that you take. Earlier, you alluded to socialist realism, the kind of state-sanctioned art form of the Soviet Union. Is there a modern equivalent that Putin has to offer aside from perhaps state-backed television?
Not only socialism. Путин — это микс из деспотического прошлого России. Ну, это и сталинизм, это и средневековье, это и религиозный фанатизм. Ну, это такой гибрид из нашего прошлого.
So Putin isn't just socialist realism. He's a hodgepodge of our despotic past, of the Stalinist, medieval, and religious tendencies. He's a hybrid of everything.
It's hard to say. The, no. Но в литературе нет, но в как бы официальной пропаганде, но это уже не соцреализм, собственно. Это вот не, я сказал, что это некий микс из разных агрессивных практик. И, собственно, там много всего, да, и в том числе и собственно, средневековые практики, как бы, ну, я имею в виду именно на уровне как бы этой пропаганды и фашистские, и, ну, и разные.
So not in literature, but in official propaganda, you can see a sort of language beginning to emerge that's a mix of various aggressive practices. You've got sort of medieval elements, fascistic elements, and this is in the propaganda that's sort of like you said on Channel One.
Thank you again. These are both systems novels, one in the future, one in the past, historic. Were the translations paired this way? They're both seeming to criticize a similar or dissect a similar apathy, but one does it in a hyper bureaucratic lens and one does it in a more social lens. Was that, I guess also for you, Max, was this intentional, them releasing at the same time, or was that just serendipitous, or are these in conversation or not?
Do you have an answer? Right?
Yeah. So we did make this plan very conscientiously for these books coming out, and Dalkey and NYRB are working together in very collaborative and sort of comradely, I would say, not too ironically, fashion. And essentially, we wanted to start out with Telluri and Their Four Hearts because I think they represent two peaks in Sorokin's career. Of course, Telluri represents the peak of the free jazz peak. Like I said before, it's an incredibly free book. I compare it to late Miles records a lot, that he's completely free, total mastery. Whereas Their Four Hearts is like him extracting the last of the Soviet state from his soul. By way of violence, aesthetic violence. And so going through this schedule in the next 5 years with NYRB and Dalkey, all the pairings are very intentional. I think the best representation of that is in Russian, Raman and Norma, two of Vladimir's early novels, are actually palindromes. Unfortunately, that won't work in English. So one is the deconstruction of the socialist realism, Norma, the norm, and one is a deconstruction of classical Russian literature. So those are together in 1 year. But all the pairings are intentional, and you're right that one is bureaucratic and one is psychedelic and future looking.
Спасибо большое за книгу. My question has to do with your search for a new form. I see a lot of medievalism coming up in your work, and I'm wondering how you first started to use this imagery and how you think it contributes or what it does for your search for the new form.
Это не я пришел, собственно, это мир во многом разворачивается сейчас в сторону нового средневековья. Ну,
it isn't, I didn't make this decision.
Если говорить о России, там, Средней Азии и Востоке и Европе, собственно, Восточной Европе.
So I didn't make this decision. It seems to me that the world is turning in the direction of the medieval, of medievalness. And if you look at Central Asia, Russia, the East, and Eastern Europe as well, this is sort of coming to pass everywhere.
Ну, в России, собственно, ее проблема в том, что, собственно, она не в Путине, как бы, да, а в том, что там система государственной власти – это средневековая пирамида, построенная Иваном Грозным в XVI веке, собственно. Ну вот, пирамида, где наверху один правитель. И она, собственно, не изменилась с XVI века радикально.
So, essentially, the problem in Russia isn't only to do with Putin. Russia's real problem is that it was built as this medieval pyramid that hasn't changed at all since the 16th century. And this pyramid is meant to have only one ruler at the top. And it really hasn't changed radically as it should have since that 16th century. And it was built by Ivan the Terrible to be this way.
Ну, и этот опыт, собственно, он вдохновляет других диктаторов других государств.
And this experiment, if you will, also inspires other dictators of other states.
Вот почему это так опасно, собственно, сейчас.
That's why it's so dangerous.
И сейчас в Украине идет война 21 века с 16 веком.
And right now in Ukraine, what's happening is a war between the 21st century and the 16th century.
Thank you very much. I had a question about your first novel, and about, as I understand, it was published in Syntaxis by Sinyavsky.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you could speak a little bit about that experience of publishing it with him, and maybe you've spoken about this other places, but I'd be also be very curious your reflections on Avram Tiertz. I mean, we've talked about socialist realism as a type of writing. Was his writing, Sinyavsky's writing, influential on you in those early days, and how do you reflect on it now?
Ну, я не очень, собственно, вижу связь с как бы прозой Аврама Терца, собственно. Ну, просто этот роман понравился жене Синявского, и он она решила напечатать «Очередь», собственно. «Очередь» — это мой первый роман, написанный диалогами, где люди стоят, это в Москве происходит дело, в бесконечной гигантской очереди, непонятно зачем, собственно, и их жизнь происходит в очереди, на самом деле. Вот. Ну вот, экспериментальный такой роман, собственно.
So I don't really see the connection with Avram Tiertz. Basically, what happened is that Zhenya Sinyavsky read the book, liked it, decided to publish it. My first book, The Queue, is made up exclusively of dialogue. It's about people in line whose life actually just happens only in line. And, you know, this sort of experimental novel.
Yeah, The Queue is another, is a great book. It was very, very satisfying to see it recently tweeted about extensively when people were waiting in line or online for many, many hours to see the Queen's body. I don't know what they do over there. It was very grotesque, but people kept bringing up The Queue, Vladimir's novel, which is very, literature is alive. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much to Vladimir and to Max and to the Free Library. Please buy Vladimir's book and have him sign it afterwards. Really, really such a pleasure to speak with you all this evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.